Okay, so this is just a relatively brief talk on some ideas on that I've been thinking about for the past year or so about what are challenging areas to do searches in, but where we may be able to make some progress at being able to do low background searches without using any of the traditional methods for beating down the QCD background, such as missing energy or leptons. So coming up with new ways using jet substructure at reducing the overall background. The paper that a lot of this is based on just came out last week. Sorry, I don't have the archive number, but people know how to use Spires. So the outline of the talk is as follows. I'm going to briefly give some motivation. And it's always good to keep in mind, like, what classes of signals can we, could we be looking for, but we may not be looking for at this point, just because they are challenging. And then I'm going to talk about some substructure variables, including one that we just proposed in the last paper, closely related to ones that have been proposed before, and then apply it to multi-jet searches and how to use these variables in creating data-driven backgrounds, which I think is a important perspective on how to do searches. It's, you need to be able to be able to separate signal from background, but you need to know what your background is. And I think that there are some interesting ways of using FatJets to create data-driven backgrounds. And hopefully this will be actually a discussion rather than just a one-sided thing. One-sided talk, and briefly I'll conclude with some outlook. So the first round of the LHC is complete. The analyses are coming out. And I think it's fair to say that physics beyond the Higgs boson did not jump out at us. And we have about 2 years before the LHC turns back on at 14 TeV. And right now, I think that what I'm looking for is doing more analyses and also being able to use some of the park data that is out there. And this park data is things that doesn't have intrinsically great signal to background, but it could be where that jet techniques might be able to gain some be able to make some sense out of these signals. And the types of signals that we could hope to find in this period are what I would call hidden signals. And that's because, we've done a lot of searches so far that have missing energy and leptons. And these are, pretty clean signals overall. And they're just, we haven't seen any definitive excess there. And so now it's, I think, the perfect time to examine the channels where you don't have these powerful handles at beating down the QCD background. And so this involves, coming up with new handles to distinguish signals from QCD and top quark physics. Okay. I'm going to basically, in my mind, the way that I think about the classes of signals is putting them into two different categories. One are what I would call simple signals. Ones where there are only a handful of particles in the final state. And it's really important to be able to make use of all the kinematic information available. Because if you don't use that information, then they can have really high backgrounds. And so you really want to be taking advantage of all the invariant mass combinations and really tailoring your searches for these signals. And that's because they don't have a lot of a lot of final state particles. They don't have a lot of parameters that go into defining them. So you can really tailor your searches to find these signals, to find specific signals. And you can just completely classify what they look like. On the other hand, there are complicated signals. And these are things that just have a lot of final state particles, say more than 6, like 7, 8 to 10, 12, 30 even. Final state particles. And it's just not practical to use all that information. In fact, what you start trying to use the information from like more than 6 particles, it starts becoming, you know, very inefficient for the signal once you start, because you start getting combinatoric backgrounds. Your efficiency at even finding all the final state particles starts being a big hit. And so these require a different approach to, you know, separating signal from background. But the good news is that these have lower irreducible backgrounds, but the challenge is how do you actually separate them, signal from background, in a high efficiency manner. So I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about these two classes of signals. So simple signals, these are things that we have dedicated searches for already. So the simplest one are just diejet resonances. You know, there are two final state particles, and you know, there's an invariant mass combination. There's just minimal information there, and you want to use as much as you have. The next two signals, I think, are ones that we are now searching for. And these are where you pair produce new, say, colored resonances, and they decay into pairs of jets. And so you have now 4 jets in your final state, and you can have you're looking for 2 bumps, and maybe they combine into a parent resonance. And these are, you know, searches that are underway at this point. And they are, you know, but you really want to, it illustrates that you really want to make use of all of that kinematic information of those 4 jets. You can also have pair-produced 3 jet resonances. One example of this is the R parity violating gluino, which decays into 3 quarks. There have been recent searches that look for boosted pairs of these resonances. And finally, you can have the original motivation for a lot of the boost work, which are looking for the KK gluon decaying into TT bar pairs, which you can think of as 3 jet resonances. So being able to look for both the 2 top masses and the parent resonance. And these are, you know, all, you know, well-studied examples and what I would call simple signals. Okay. Complicated signals are less common because, well, there's just a lot more variety of them. And so we don't tend to think about, you know, each one individually as carefully. And so, you know, they have low production rates, and so we want to have really high efficiency at finding them. And if you aren't careful, you can have very poor signal to background. One of the classic ones is the signature of natural supersymmetry, where you have a gluino that is pair-produced, that then decays into a top and a stop, and the stop decays into a top and the LSP. And this is a relatively easy example of a simple final state because you have missing energy, leptons, and B jets. But the important thing to take away here is that you have, you know, 12 final state visible particles, and the reconstruction of this final state is not part of the discovery process. You're doing inclusive things, looking for excesses for these final state particles. For these events, so giving rise to, you know, 3 B jets and a lepton.
So what do you mean, not part of the discovery process?
Well, you aren't trying to reconstruct the 4 tops, for instance.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. So you aren't reconstructing. You aren't looking at the detailed kinematic properties of this event.
Okay, I see what you mean.
Okay. I know of no search that has high. You don't gain in efficiency. You can just separate signal from background.
You certainly don't gain in efficiency.
Yeah, and so it's not part of the discovery process. Afterwards, we certainly want to do that. But a more complicated example is where you have turn on the baryonic R parity violating operator, and the LSP decays into 3 quarks. Now here you've lost one of the big handles, that the missing energy that came from the LSP is now gone, and the missing energy that you get is mostly from leptons from the W, from the W decays. And so you end up here with, I think it's 18 jets, up to 18 jets, 18 quarks in the final state. And how many jets you find, well, it's going to be distributed over many final states. But this is still a relatively easy example. And that's because you have lots of B jets here, and you still have the leptons from the W decays. But again, you know, trying to actually reconstruct this event is, you know, not going to be the best strategy at discovering it. A cut and count approach, trying to find regions of phase space where this can be cleanly separated, both from QCD, TD bar, and various other backgrounds, is the important, you know, is possible without having to try to look for, you know, I guess that's six three-jet resonances. Okay, so these are, you know, the classic SUSY examples of complicated signals. And they can certainly get more complicated. The LSP, this doesn't necessarily have to be the LSP. This could be the NLSP, like that then decays into the LSP through emitting a W or a Z boson. And that could make these events even more complicated. But another full class of theories are theories of new strong dynamics. These have been, you know, go under the name of colorons. So let me just briefly describe to you what they are. Imagine that you have a new gauge group that is asymptotically free, so confines near the TEV scale. And there is a Dirac pair of quarks that are charged as an N under that SUN gauge theory. Now, they're also charged under the standard model SU3 gauge symmetry. Now, when this confines, what you end up with is a techni pion and a techni rho. And it's not, these are just analogs of the standard model particles. And these have gauge quantum numbers that are octets under color. And they're spin 0 and spin 1, respectively. And obviously, there's a full tower that comes above this. But these are expected to be the lightest particles. Now, when this octet of pions, color octet of pions, is produced, it can decay. It can decay either via the triangle diagram, which would be the analogy of the pi 0 decaying into a pair of gammas. But instead of going to photons, you're going to pairs of gluons. Alternatively, they might decay to a pair of TT bars through a higher dimension contact interaction in this theory. Okay. Then you can also consider the rho resonance, the spin 1 resonance, that you can just singly make through a pair of quarks or gluons. And so you can have single production of the rho meson. Now, when you think about what these final states that you're looking for, if you're just doing pair production of the pions, you'll get four gluons, which fell under what I would call a simple signal. Or even if you go through the rho resonance, you get four gluons. But if you do pair production of the rho mesons, which can actually be the dominant production mode, you can end up with eight gluons. And now here you have many, you just have a lot of combinatoric background, and you're in an eight-jet back final state. And it's, you know, really questionable whether or not you want to try to reconstruct all four of the pi resonances and the two rho resonances that go with it. Alternatively, if the dominant decay mode is having the pion going into TT bar, you end up with these much more complicated final states, but without any intrinsic missing energy, so four tops or eight tops. And these are, you know, clearly fall into that, what I would call complicated signals. Okay, now this is just the simplest theory of strong dynamics that you can imagine. You can just ask, what happens if you have two copies of that fermion? So that you have not just one quark, but a pair of them that are both fundamentals under, that they're both triplets under QCD. Well, now the number of mesons and resonances grow. So you end up with the same resonances that you had before, this pion and rho meson. But you also end up with three more of them that would have would be triplets of flavor under this a flavor symmetry. And then you'd also end up with something with this state that has this pi zero, which has no color, but it has three states down at low energies, along with a complementary rho meson. Now, what you would expect from this is that the colored resonances, these states up here, would be sizably heavier than these neutral states down here. Now, of course, you aren't going to be able to make these states because you don't couple to them in any dominant way. So what you'd expect is that these particles up here to decay down into these neutral states and giving rise to sizable cascade decays that will make these much more complicated. And the details of exactly which decay chain, actually depend a lot on exactly the parameters in this upstairs theory. And there, I worked it on the plane last night, and there's, I think about six different classes of theories that you could expect for this low energy theory. It's possible to make this one of these rho mesons that then decay into a pair of pions, and then these pions decay into several of these pi zeros plus a pair of quarks. And so you end up with incredible high multiples in the final state, and you may have no missing energy or leptons or B jets. So you don't have any of the standard handles that we've been using to separate signal from background. And you just have a lot of final state quarks and gluons. And the question is, how do you get access to these signals? So thin jets are great because they're sort of like, just little objects here. They're described by their PP, eta, and phi. And so when we usually think about looking for these types of signals, we think about just, okay, let's go out there and let's count the number of jets in the final state. And that we're going to look for these signals by looking out at the tail, large numbers of jets. Now, one of the challenges with this is that the phase space is very high dimensional. You have the PT, eta, and phi of each one of these jets. And if you think about what's going on, both the signal and background produces lots of jets too through the parton shower, because it's just very easy to radiate off an additional quark or gluon and produce an additional jet. And so this means that your signal and your background are distributed over many final state multiplicities. So you're dealing with sort of heterogeneous samples. So maybe you have to look in 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 jets to be able to distinguish your signal from background. And the problem is that we don't actually know how to compute from first principles these types of backgrounds. State of the art is, 2 to 7, 2 to 8 final states at leading order, let alone next to leading order. And there can be, large corrections to these final states. And data-driven approaches are rely on extrapolating from n to n plus 1 jets. And that's, a very hard process to make get systematic control of these estimates of backgrounds. So what I've been thinking about is taking a different approach to these types of signals. Using fat jets, so radius 1, radius 1.2, it doesn't really matter so long as they're large. And that's because these fat jets have a lot of structure to them. And at the same time, they reduce the complexity of the event in some way, because you can't have high multiplicity. There just isn't enough geometric phase space in the central region of the detector to fit more than a handful of jets, 3, 4, 5, 6 jets. And so you no longer have high multiplicity. Instead, what you have is that these jets are augmented by jet shapes, whether it's mass, girth, etc. And the way that these signals will appear is that they'll appear in anomalies in these jet shapes in the multi-jet signal. So you'll have multiple fat jets, and that the properties of these fat jets will appear to be they will not appear like standard QCD jets. And one of the benefits of this is that the parton shower doesn't produce additional fat jets because, you know, your jets are, you know, a quarter of the detector, and you know, the parton shower doesn't reach you know, that far away from the jet. So you really have your fixed multiplicity, and that then you're going to be looking for the properties of the jets inside of the properties of these jets in an ensemble of fat jets. Okay, so that was the brief motivation of the way that I'm thinking about classes of signals and how I want to approach the problems.
Heckle.
You can heckle?
Or ask questions.
So, heckle.
So if I'm going to heckle,
okay.
I don't think I actually want to heckle.
Okay, heckle away then. now that you prefaced it. Yes. And you're smiling.
Whether you're looking for 16 jets, mm-hmm. 16 thin jets, or 4 fat jets with 4 sort of subjects within them,
mm-hmm.
some level you're doing the same thing.
I'm going to argue that I don't think that you are quite doing the same thing, if you'll give me a couple of slides.
Okay, I'll heckle you on a couple of slides.
Yeah. I'll appreciate that. Then you may have real heckling then, okay? Okay, so what I'd like to talk about is some substructure variables.
Actually,
you want to heckle?
Well, not that I don't think I can, but
I'm sure you're very good at it, David.
So about the m to n plus one,
mm-hmm.
A data-driven estimate of high jet multiplicity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first of all, I understand. Yeah, fine, we can't calculate it, but you know, to some extent, this staircase scaling works in the range that we can test it with some, you know, 20-30% uncertainty bands, which end up being the sorts of uncertainties that we would aggregate from other sources anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, is there anything stronger than the argument that you gave against that? Because the common reaction to showing, you know, that sort of final state is, well, heck, we don't expect there to be a lot of 12 jet final states where each of those jets has 50 GeV, so why the heck can't we count?
Look, you can always go to the region of your background where you have no more events, right? And then, you know, it'll be a very clean search. The question is, how low can you push things?
Mm-hmm.
Because you want to, you know, increase acceptance.
Yeah.
And so you want to be able to push things into lower and lower, you know, you want to lower the cuts as far as you can so that you get as many final states as possible, you know, as many of the decays as possible. And if you don't have control of your backgrounds in a systematic way, then, you know, if you see an anomaly, you know, you certainly can make an exclusion. But the question is, can you make a discovery with it? You know,
mm-hmm.
if you do see an anomaly out there,
mm-hmm.
what do you do? And I think that trying to come up with more systematic ways of doing better data-driven background estimates, I think, is worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess my question here is, what's the metric for better?
So the question is, can you have higher signal efficiency? Can you do looser cuts and still maintain low backgrounds? And maintain a high signal efficiency. And I think that's the real metric. You know, are you actually improving your the reach,
mm-hmm.
And getting access to signals that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the acceptance for getting 12 jets is, you know, from a signal that has, you know, 15 final state quarks or gluons, you know, is not actually that high. I mean, because you can have things that fall accidentally forward and fall beneath the PT threshold. You start mismeasuring them once they're getting down to the PT threshold. And so, you know, when you go to a high multiplicity, you're distributing your energy over lots of final states. And so the actual PT scale of those events, you know, may not actually be that high. You know, they may be down near your jet threshold. So this is an alternative way of, you know, potentially recovering some of that acceptance loss. Any other heckling, which I appreciate? Okay, so to get to Gavin's heckling, so the basic approach that I'm gonna be thinking about is using substructure variables on top of fat jets. And we have a lot of them at this point, mass, girth, and subjettinesses, colorful variables. And one that we've been thinking about recently is using and counting the number of subjets in an event. And so I'm just going to speak about that, because I think it's actually an interesting property. So it's very useful to be able to, you know, just classify your jets by how many subjets that they have. And this isn't something that is typically done. You could say, well, what about n subjettiness? And n subjettiness is not really answering the question. You know, trying to turn, you know, your n different n subjettinesses into a discrete number is quite challenging. We spent quite a bit of time trying to do it, and we came up with a way of counting up to 5 subjects, but it's quite complicated. And I wouldn't say robust is the answer I would use. So the approach that we took is using the more standard approach of reversing the jet tree. So we're going to take our jets that we found and clustered using, let's say, the anti-KT algorithm, radius 1.0. And now we're going to recluster them using, recluster each jet separately using the Cambridge-Ockham tree. And we're going to reverse the tree and go until we and find a way of counting the number of subjects just using that. And
this what does this gain you beyond counting jets? KT4 jets with a couple of extra cuts?
I'll show you.
Okay,
so let me just run through this algorithm. It's very straightforward. You start with your jet tree right here, which were seeded with these particles and clustered in this way. So you start at the top of the tree. If the mass of the jet is less than a mass cut, you call it a subject. Otherwise, you uncluster into 2 subjects. Okay, and then you make sure that delta r between the 2 jets is bigger than some that the delta r between the 2 jets is bigger than some amount. And then you make sure that the ratio of the PTs of the 2 of the subleading jet is bigger than some amount. If it's less than that threshold, then you throw J2, the second softer subject, out. And this is a form of trimming, I believe. And then finally, you make sure that that the second subject also passes a PT threshold. And then you iterate. So now you come back up here, look at the second subject. It passes the jet mass cut. You decluster. They aren't too close to each other. The energy is evenly split, and they both pass the PD threshold. You come up to this next approach. It has a big mass. You decluster the last step. This third particle right here, the second thing is doesn't share the momentum equally enough, so you throw it out, start over. It doesn't pass the mass cut, and so you end up with 3 subjects your particles identified through the tree, that the remaining subtrees. And this is, you know, a relatively very close to the heptop tagger program, and it we played around with the values, and the results were amazingly strongly dependent on it. The mass cut we used was that we required a 30 JeV mass cut, that this R cut was bigger than 0.15, and that the Y cut was bigger than a tenth. And finally, the PT cut was 30 JeV.
this results didn't depend much on
that. They didn't depend too strongly. It depended most strongly on this scale. The PT cut was pretty minor. It was partially motivated also by, if you have, you know, subjects that have, you know, very low energy, you may not be able to reconstruct them very well. They're sort of maybe like peripheral, you know, topple clusters that may fall, that may not be measured very accurately. So best to throw them away. And so this is just using a 0.1 by 0.1 detector. And this is how a R equals, I think this was a 1.2, R equals 1.2 anti-KT jet with all these cells here were reclustered into four subjects.
So how much of a result changes when the TT cut changes by factor 2 or M cut?
M cut does make a sizable difference. And this is why I should say that I was, you know, I really wanted to try to make n-subjettiness work is because it doesn't have any intrinsic scale associated with it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a bunch of dimensionless numbers. And so it means that, you know, you can just be looking, you aren't breaking the conformal symmetry of a QCD. This obviously has two intrinsic scales, one of which is, you know, sort of motivated by reconstruction. The other one is just an intrinsic scale of 30 JeV. And that means that your lower momentum jets are going to be sensitive to this. So the number of subjects you find, if you're around 100 JeV or 200 JeV jets, is going to be influenced by the scale here.
But why doesn't that work? Why doesn't that work? Sorry.
Why, this worked. I wouldn't say anyone. So this worked in R Monte Carlo, being able to separate signal from background, counted about the same as these other methods. But it's a very complicated procedure. So this is required, what is that? Is that 11 steps of classification to get to count up to 5? So first you look to see if tau 1 is less than 13%. If it's between 13 and 25%, if it's less than that, it's one subject. If it's big, between 13 and 25%, it's two subjects. If it's bigger than 25% and tau 2-1 is less than 40%, it's two subjects. Then you keep on going. And it's, you know, trying to take these continuous numbers and turn them into a number of subjects. And then you also don't really know which particles are associated with which subjects. And so
why do you have to deal with discrete numbers?
I think it's useful to be able to deal with discrete numbers.
But yeah. I think that's the crucial point. If you're trying to deal with discrete numbers, then
you can try to use idea. And so Tim Cohen actually tried to use just n subjettinesses,
yeah.
And use that as a discriminating power. We wanted to have a more discrete approach to be able to do this. And you know, perhaps you can just start using tau 2-1 and tau 3-1 and tau 5-6 and blah 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 to be able to separate signal from background. We think that you know, having this discrete number is actually quite useful, and I think it actually having, you know, knowing how many subjects you have inside the jet and which particles are associated with that, I think can actually have additional benefits too. For instance, you know, if you have this way of counting, maybe you shouldn't be computing n subjettiness beyond the number of subjects that you have. So if you have 4 subjects, maybe you shouldn't be computing tau 6, just because you know, then you're just kind of resolving the clusters of you know, just the final little showering at the end.
Well, then how do you define a subject?
Well, through these procedures. So. It might be a way of, you know, telling you how far to compute.
The choice of 30 is motivated by signal.
Presumably, you want to stay away from hadron masses.
Yes, exactly.
Right? So,
this is about as low as we can go. Going higher, you know, you're really beginning to. You have to go. I mean, 30 JeV of mass is actually quite a bit for modern mass. You know, maybe having this be some ratio of. Maybe this could be dropped down to 20 and keep the mass over PT ratio Yeah,
yeah, I mean, that, you can make this all dimensionless. You're saying it's dimensionful. You could actually make it dimensionless just by making it.
Yeah, we found that, you know, we tried that initially and it didn't work quite as out. This worked better just straight out of the box, actually.
Did you also try just the number of KT subjects?
Yes, we have that in the paper. Again, that still has an intrinsic scale with it.
So how does that fare compared to this?
It's not that dissimilar. I'm not going to actually talk about it in here, but in the paper we have a comparison between the two. So we find that it actually counts for the operating points we chose. That counts KT counts fewer subjects than the Cambridge-Aachen, even though the Cambridge-Aachen had more trying to separate off the number of soft QCD like emissions more. Okay, so getting to David's criticism and potentially and Gavin's question, the number of subjects we found does not seem to behave like the number of jets. Okay, there are many fewer subjects than jets with both the KT method that I didn't describe and this Cambridge-Aachen approach. It does not exhibit staircase scaling. So this is the fraction of jets that have one, two, up to eight subjects here for QCD jets with PT bigger than 100 JeV. And what you see is that it's actually a pretty steeply falling function. And if you take the standard staircase ratio of n to n plus 1, or n plus 1 to n, what you find is that for 100 JeV jets, it falls precipitously and then plateaus here, and you're clearly being influenced by that 30 JeV mass.
Sorry, 100 JeV subjets or like
100. This is 100 JeV parent jets.
Okay.
So you're clearly being influenced by that 30 JeV cut. So now it's bumped up to 500 JeV. So you're getting away from all the intrinsic scales in this algorithm. And what you notice is that it's a steeply falling function here. In fact, that steeply falling function looks a lot like a staircase. But this should be the variable. It should be flat. And in fact, if you take the ratio of ratios, the double staircase, what you find is that, particularly for this 500 JeV sample, you find that this is nearly flat. So it's behaving more like a Gaussian rather than an exponential in the number of subjects. So it's actually much harder. And so what somehow that by being able to remove the soft QCD-like radiation, you're reducing the number of jets in your event. The things that would have been identified as jets are being trimmed away. And you're getting more into the hard substructure, which is a smaller part of the phase space. And so this is part of the benefit that we find. So now you can criticize and heckle. And I should say, I have no understanding of this double staircase that this is just noticing that it's a much steeper spectrum. That's because a lot of jets in QC are just radiated off of the hard jet, so they're just sort of seeding adjacent phase space, and that's being removed by this procedure. And so in fact, the multiplicity of subjets is actually sizably lower than the multiplicity of jets.
I mean, I think that in discussing all of this, one of the difficulties is that when we're asking for, even in sort of making a comparison and arguing which is better, for which can we have a better data-driven background, one of the difficulties is we don't understand what kinematic configurations are leading to sort of 10-jet final states.
Yes.
And perhaps one of the advantages of this is that one has a better picture of what's going on because you're saying you have to.
You're seeding quarters of the detector or more, and then then all the radiation side of it's being grouped together. Whereas, a lot of the multi-jet background is actually are dye jets that sort of fragment off into
many jets. Yeah, a lot of ISR and a lot of FSR, but nothing
exactly.
I mean, this gets back to the conversation from the other day. I mean, why wouldn't something like N jettiness pick that up then? Right? I mean, isn't that the design?
We So we apply, you know, we were computing, you know, our ensogenesis using pruning and, you know, trying to clean up all the underlying vendor radiation. And we didn't find that it get beyond two or three and it's just, it's a mess.
What about mapping it back onto something else?
Now, maybe what would be useful is pick a multiplicity and then look at the ensogenesis of the, you know, once you have the subject, once you know this, that you're dealing with a three subject event, look at tau one and tau two. Or if you're doing a five subject event, look at tau one, tau two, tau three, and tau four. And that may contain a lot more information because you've separated out all the junk of where you have just one or two subjects. And that may actually contain a lot more information. And the patterns may be much more transparent.
I mean, okay, you're up to six, seven jets here. At least
that's eight, actually, right? Because it's at an n plus one.
So I mean, we have NNLO calculations up to W plus six, right? W plus five.
Four.
Well,
I know.
NNLO
gives you W plus five. You get W plus four at NNLO and
but
NNLO.
So we don't even have two. We don't have W plus one at NNLO.
Sorry, NNLO. So, but you can take those events and run this where you have, you know, your sort of standard understanding. You have your standard jet reconstruction. You have the you know, fairly extensive theoretical calculation, and then compare it.
We are in the process of using black hat on some simple events, some E plus E minus events, and using this. It's work in progress. We have nothing to say at this point. But I think that yes, that is, will be quite interesting. But I don't think that I would expect NLO to change the picture.
I guess that's not what I'm not trying to say that's going to change the picture. I guess all I'm trying to get at is, you know, you show somebody that Feynman diagram from earlier on where you have your Guino pair production, and,
yep,
you know, the at least from the experimental side, the standard reaction is, why do we need to deal with all this complicated stuff? Why don't we just count the jets?
Well, I'm just saying that there are many fewer jets to count in this case. And so that's, I think, there are many fewer subjects than jets to count, and that you're identifying, you know, interesting jets more often, you know, things that are widely separated and not coming from the parton shower.
Yeah.
And
so, this is a Madgraph jet.
These are Madgraph jets. We tried.
How much?
We did up to four. So the backgrounds that I'll speak of further, we use Sherpa weighted events going out to six. For the stuff that's coming up, but our statistics on this was just too poor, and so we went with Madgraph. In fact, the way that we discovered this is that we made a small mistake with the Sherpa sample, and that we ignored the weights. And what we found is that it was dead flat in this double ratio, and what that did was that it's sort of sampling very high energy parts of way over sampling high energy parts of phase space. So you're getting many more high PT jets. And we were finding that it was dead flat. And so that's what motivated us to look at these higher mass jets, higher PT jets, to be able to, and noticing that it was flat. So we think that this actually persists in Sherpa, although obviously that's a completely uncontrolled approximation, yes, we're hoping to regenerate a much larger sample with better control. Okay, any further heckling questions? Okay, so now I'm going to go on to the multi-jet search. Many of you have been at Boost before, so you know the rough idea. That you take this high multiplicity SAMP, this high multiplicity final state, which would have been, you know, some ridiculous number of jets if you used thin jets, and you recluster it into much lower jets. And the challenge now is being able to distinguish signal from background, where your signal is, you know, something like this, and your background is QCD with a couple of, with just, you know, thin jets that are now being called fat jets. And obviously the way that you do this is that you want to be able to distinguish normal QCD jets from the weird fat jets coming from a signal. And so you require multiple fat jets, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 if using R equals 1.0, and require them to be moderate to high PT, so 100 JeV or more. Okay, and the basic idea is that you can use any set of variables that, as you go out to the tail of that distribution, QCD becomes weirder, becomes less and less common for QCD to populate the reaches of that. And what I'm going to be talking about today are two variables. One is mass, and the other one is n subjects. So the fat jets are isolated from each other. We aren't going to use any of the geometric information, so none of the eta and phi information. They're just at four corners of the detector. I'm going to talk about four fat jet searches. And that means that what you're going to want to do is look for the pairs of mass and n subjects to distinguish QCD from signal. Okay, so using mass, most of our signals that we've done a lot of work on have some missing energy, whether it's coming from Ws or from LSPs. As I said, this should not be we don't want to only bias ourselves with that. But what that means is that what we've been looking at a lot of times have meant that the top quarks are the most important background. Tops have an intrinsic mass scale of 350 JeV in terms of their masses. And so if you just sum up the jet masses and consider this as your event shape variable, the sum of the four fat jet masses, this is a very useful way of distinguishing signal from background, particularly for TOPS, which has an intrinsic scale of 350 GeV. Now, if you're dealing with intrinsically metless signals, things that just have no missing energy, perhaps this isn't the right variable. And maybe considering mass over PT might be a better variable. If you're just going to start out and just say, screw missing energy from the get-go, maybe summing up the mass over PT ratios or something where the more energetic QCD events are going to have an intrinsically small value because getting a lot of energy in QCD is not that hard. And so if you have a 1 TeV jet getting mass of 2 1 TeV jets getting mass of 300, 400 JeV, jet mass of 300, 400 JeV is not that hard. But nevertheless, I'm going to talk about this today. I haven't done that other research. And the way I like to think about this is that this is a replacement for HT. HT is the sum of the transverse jet energies. And if you include the jet mass in the sum of the jet mass squared, what you see is that HT is strictly larger than the jet mass. And whereas the signal has the mass over PT order one, which means that the HT and this jet mass is order one. The background has mass over PT less than one. And so that means that the HT is much bigger than the jet mass. So you have higher efficiency for using jet mass at fixed HT. And so you can keep less background at the same signal efficiency. And even if your jet only has one subjet inside of it, you always get the jet mass from just the parton shower. And so you never do parametrically worse than QCD. So this is a useful, what we found to be a very useful and relatively simple variable.
Even when you're doing these small jets, you can also form like a mass variable.
But if you use like R equals 0.4 jets, most of that jet mass is coming from the part.
You form the mass between jets.
Yes, another approach to this, which hopefully is obvious why this can possibly do better, is that you can just recluster your jets into fat jets and then use jet mass. You probably don't want to take the invariant mass of the entire event, though.
I'm still asking, what's the difference between
taking
if I have 10 jets, I can form the mass variables.
Well, let's say that this is you have a you have a diegetic event that's been clustered into six jets. Okay? If you take the invariant mass of the entire thing, this is going to be roughly, this is the center of mass energy, right? Whereas if you take the invariant mass of this and the invariant mass of this, that is going to be much smaller.
Yeah.
Right? And so you can totally cluster into R equals 0.4 anti-KT jets and then further recluster things with up to R equals like 1.0. And then
you've done both in analysis.
Yeah. And that's I don't have any I haven't studied that systematically, but I think it should in principle work.
They're close.
Yeah.
It basically turns into an effective trimming.
Yeah.
Because whatever PT scale you set on your R equals 0.4 jets is a sort of like an F cut.
Yeah.
And then
if you apply, some pruning, get rid of some of these.
Really apply pruning if you recluster the R equals 0.4.
Well, you may still want to get rid of asymmetric splittings.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay,
sure.
So
you could
Okay. So that I think that
But I just want to point out, you do a little bit worse than if you were to just start off and cluster your jet inputs because you've reduced, in some sense, your information flow in this way.
Yes, and you may have lost some of the energy that may have gone.
Yeah, but it's not, it depends on what the scale of the event is that determines how much of a difference it is.
Yes. However you get your fat jets for the previous variable,
the thing is, this is super easy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just wondering whether you do need the fat jets to define.
I think you want to. You don't want to take the invariant mass of the entire event.
No, but I can.
I think you want to cluster them into geometric regions and then take the invariant mass of those regions,
uh-huh.
And require several of those regions, four of those regions.
What the jet algorithm gives you is a well-defined way of reducing the dimensionality. Basically.
Yeah. Okay. The other variable that we used is just the sum of the number of subjects over the entire event. And again, this is because the number of jets is not the number of subjects is not the number of jets. Doesn't scale the same way. These are not the same thing. And obviously, these are correlated together, but they're not, in lockstep together. So this is a terrible plot, but it says something relatively interesting. So this is the number of actually the KT jets summed over the entire event from I don't know why we're down that low, but from 0 to 12, and this is the acceptance on this axis. These different curves are increasing the number of the jet masses, the sum of the jet masses in a four jet event. And so right here you have no jet mass cut, and what you see is that if you require less than three or four subjects in your event, you have 100% efficiency. And then as you go up, your efficiency drops precipitously. As you start increasing the jet mass, what you see is that you have this drop in acceptance at low multiplicity, but that they begin to combine together up at high energies. So this is only 450 GeV of jet mass. If we're doing metless searches, we'll want to go up to higher values so that they'll begin to turn over down lower. But they're not strictly speaking the same. And that's just because, where you're starting to get significant jet mass is where you're starting to get, two prongs per jet here, which would be, between in the transition from 4 to 8, there's a, you're down here at 450 GeV for the jet mass, some of the jet masses, you're getting on average, six subjects in the entire event, which is saying that, two of these four fat jets have two prongs inside of them. Okay, so, that color didn't come out well. Okay, so let's just look at the background. This was optimized to look for some signals that had some missing energy inside of them, but had high multiplicity. So here are two signals right here. Doesn't really matter what they are. And QCD has a steeply falling missing energy background. We're going to be using between 100 the 150 GeV of missing energy. And what you see over here is that TD bar, V plus jets, and you have diboson and miscellaneous crap right here for your other backgrounds. And what you notice is that V plus jets is making up a lot of the tail of the high missing energy contribution. But the jet mass cut is, if you look at the jet mass distribution after that 150 GeV missing energy cut, you begin to really squash the V plus jets background, which doesn't have any intrinsic jet mass in the problem. So you have this more steeply falling spectrum of jet mass, so that you've reduced the ratio of TD bar to V plus jets to TD bar. So it becomes a subdominant background, and TD bar becomes your dominant background, and you've eviscerated a QCD with a little bit of missing energy. And what you see is that the TD bar, has a jet mass that's pretty stable over this region, then begins to drop off above 200 JeV, and begins to fall, begins to parallel the V plus jets above 350 GeV, where you've sort of grouped your two tops into you have boosted tops in that case, and then two additional jets that are radiated off. Okay. And then after applying that jet mass cut, which was 280 GeV, you can look at the number of subjets, and you can see that you're just systematically improving the signal over background once you go out beyond, I think it was six, seven subjets here. And you can have big improvements in this high region is being populated almost dominantly by signals. Okay. And so if we just look at the improvements in signal over background for one of these typical netfulse searches, which was something like, I think it wasn't quite this final state, but it's something related to it. Right here we had one of the Atlas NJET searches, like six to nine jets. Right here, and this was this search right here with 14 subjets. This is a Gluino next leading order production cross section, and this was the CMS black hole search, which last time I was here, Greg Landsberg said was gonna do quite well, and it's not doing quite well. And what you see is that we're finding that out at the tails of this distribution, you can get a factor of eight improvement in a signal times branching ratio, which will take you a long time to root end that up. So it would require improvements in this NJET search. And in terms of mass reach, obviously it's less impressive. You go from about 1150 up to just a bit over 1400 in improvement.
Okay. But Jay, this is a bit of an apples to orange comparison because you're using a 14 subject requirement versus a six to nine jet requirement by Atlas, right?
I'm just saying that that they were aiming at similar final states.
Yeah, plus also you are now selecting a different final state here, right? You're selecting one where the energy is grouped into certain areas of the calorimeter, and they are more inclusive somehow, right?
Yes, or the more inclusive for background. Yes.
Well, okay. Well, for models that don't fit exactly this.
We also did better. We also improved some of the searches that they were specifically aimed at, but not as dramatically because those are fairly well optimized. But the point is that these searches here apply over many different signal regions without having to re-optimize many different signal regions, and that the only missing energy that you're getting here is from the Ws, not from the LSP. What type of HT did the Atlas require?
Yeah.
That was one of these scaling HTs where you took that significance of 3.5, I think. Something.
Now it's four.
It's four. A leak. Okay. So
I'm just trying to compare what your cut is.
So jet mass is very efficient at getting out to very high HT, right? Because getting a lot of of jet mass requires a huge amount of HT.
I'm just like trying to understand to what extent is this just saying that the MJ is better than HT?
I think it's MJ plus and subjects. So this is significantly better than just the. I think that we with just the MJ without the N subjects, we were doing pretty similar throughout this region. Yeah.
I mean, but I think part of Natani's point is that this MJ is kind of this N subjects. Mm-hmm. It's really like an effective jet multiplicity cut of like 20 or something.
Potentially. Yes, it's very high. We had other search regions that for lower multiplicity things where it was more modest.
I mean, we have no hope of really having a background estimate.
Well, that's what in my third half of the talk.
in the standard approach.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So the. We also do have some intrinsically metless searches with no W's. These weren't actually very, signals weren't, geared to be very high multiplicity. So we had just the Gluino pair produced decaying into QQ bar, then that LSP decaying into three subjects. So there's only 10 jets in the event. And this is the limit that we were able to do versus the Gluino next leaning order. So we weren't quite able to be able to gain sensitivity to it. We were required some ridiculous jet mass cut, but the background, was quite low, so, and was dominated by QCD, and we are doing better than the black hole search. Okay, saying, we didn't quite work here. These signals you can also imagine augmenting with B jets or leptons, and you'll get a particularly B jets right here, and you should be able to get down to the next leading order cross section. From our estimates. And the point is that these methods can be combined with B jet cuts, leptons. And again, in my third half of the talk, I want to talk briefly just about how these approaches can be used for in data-driven approaches. Okay, so QCD jets have relatively small correlations, particularly fat jets, which are isolated big objects. You've geometrically separated your jets from each other. And that means that if you're looking at your distribution of your jet masses, and let's consider mass over PT, for your for a three jet event having mass over PT x1, x2, and x3, it's the probability of getting those three jet masses from for a given PT1, PT2, PT3 is approximately the probability distribution function of getting one jet with mass over PT of x1 times that probability of getting x2 times probability of x3. And so the idea is that you can measure these single sort of jet template functions in like a control region, like a low multiplicity, low fat jet region, die fat jets, and then extrapolate it into the signal region, which may have 3, 4, or 5 subjects. And again, this is not a, we'd like to actually understand how to correct this away from this approximation of independence. But this gives a very natural data-driven approach to being able to compute your backgrounds. So you can take your this distribution from your die-jet sample and now take it directly into the multi-jet region. So you can take your events that have PT1, PT2, PT3, and then calculate the acceptance for passing a jet mass cut, which is just the integral over the jet masses over the three mass over PT ratios for these three probability distribution functions combined. And so that means that you don't necessarily need to compute this MJ distribution from first principles, but instead measure it and then apply it with this assumption of independence. And obviously the only thing we can do is look in Monte Carlo. And this is with a Sherpa sample where we matched up to 6 jets, generated some ridiculous amount of weighted events. It didn't give very great convergence. Tim Cohen and Adder and Mariangela generated this, and then Tim Liu too. They were very kind to give it to us. And so what we did is that we constructed a fat jet template in quite a few different ways, sometimes just using die jets, exclusive die jets, and taking the leading jet and using that for the template function, sometimes just using all the jets in an event and creating a template function. It gave approximately the same answer. And this black, this blue thing is the data-driven Monte Carlo approach for the efficient acceptance for passing an MJ cut. And the red is the raw Monte Carlo. And up to the Monte Carlo statistics, these you know, fall very close to each other. There are, you know, some clear features in the Monte Carlo, the raw Monte Carlo that I don't think are real, but are just convergence issues. And so that's one way of being able to do a data-driven approach to these backgrounds. You can also do this for the number of subjects in your event. And here, because mass and PT are, the number of subjects and mass are strongly correlated, what you'd want to do is do a two-dimensional template function, which would be mass over PT and the number of subjects, PT, and then create a template function, and then apply it to the multi-jet region. And what we found is that that, you know, worked you know, very well. The red is the raw Monte Carlo, and the blue is the data-driven approach. And almost always the error bar is a match, except for a little bump right here around 9 and 10 subjects. And the point is that, yeah, you can, even after the MJ cut, you can gain a couple orders of magnitude in rejection.
So Jay, you could extend this to other variables as well, like and subjectiveness.
Absolutely, yes. I did this with the tau 2 over tau 1, and it worked very well in Monte Carlo.
So just from a calculational perspective, this isn't novel. This is just a factorization theorem.
Absolutely.
It's just
and using it, yes.
Yeah, sure.
Well, and the fact that we may not have factorization theorems.
So just on this, can you remind me what the raw, what the sort of, what sample you used for data driven?
This we were using, well, we were using the same sample. We tried it with a couple different approaches. One was just using exclusive die jets, so looking at the same sample, requiring exactly two fat jets, and then looking at the leading PT jet there. And the idea there was to make sure that you maximally oversampled the substructure, you know, so that you can get a, so that you have at least three subjets, three jets in the in your leading jet, or up to three, so that you're really making sure that you're populating the phase space, and having up to, you know, five partons in that leading jet, and that worked well. It worked equally well to take all the jets in the event, and just use to create a global template function. It also worked well to take the leading jet in a multi-jet sample and use that as a template function. We didn't find sizable differences within the Monte Carlo accuracy.
In a way, you're working at a PT range where essentially you've mostly got gluon jets with a small mixture of quark jets.
It's
PT larger than 100. No, I don't know exactly, because but 80-90% of your leading jets.
So this is from Matt Schwartz and Jason Galico's paper. This is, you'd really want to think about, you know, as talking with Marcel last night, getting, you know, potentially doing different templates for quark versus gluon jets, and that's, you know, quite challenging because you don't have great control regions. In using 2, 3, and 4 jets, I didn't see what radius of jets they were using, but this is what they're, what?
4. All right, this is 0.4.
Okay. These are the admixtures of 2, 3, and 4 jets. And so for die jets, it's 50% gluon jets at 100 JeV and rises up to be mostly quark gluon at high PT.
On the general point of correlation, I mean, we've shown, and I think you even showed this, that there's about a 10% correlation in the jet masses for the two leading jets.
Yes. And it'd be nice to be able to correct for that on an event-by-event basis, something that we're, you know, looking at, trying to, and then that's, you know, you can measure the,
Okay, so looking at these figures, what I was saying is when you're working at 100 GeV, basically you've got 50% GG, you've got another 40% QG.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically means that 50 plus half of 40 is gluon, and there's some quarks left. Sort of 70-75% is gluons.
Mm-hmm.
And your additional jets are going to tend to be gluons. Your third and fourth jet.
I think so. I would.
So what you get from the template you get from your leading jet is probably okay. Now let's move this up, and you say you want to do this in the TV range.
Mm-hmm.
You've inverted your hierarchy, and now it's all quark jets with a little of mixture of quark jets.
Mm-hmm.
When you're running a search, and when you're running your template, your sort of data-driven estimates on the leading jet, there you'll be getting a quark jet. But now your extra jets are going to be gluon jets. So
well,
the question is, have you looked at that sort of region?
We have not tried to create separate templates for this, and we were doing this. We were doing this with both low PT jets and high PT jets, and we were doing it in different PT ranges too, and we couldn't find any sizable correlations. I mean, again, you're doing this over four jets now, and a lot of correlations wash themselves out.
I mean, part of the point, though, is that for the processes that we've been discussing, you're not going to get a TEV jet in your events. I mean, the sweet spot really is 100 to 400 GeV because you just have no phase space. I mean, I looked at a few of these samples. You have no phase space left, because you're typically, we're not talking about cross sections for gluing O-pair production that's even in the realm of reasonable by the time you get it to 1.2 TeV. So, I think your point is generally stands, but I think from a practical point of view, it's not relevant yet.
And the point is, I think, simply that you have an admixture of quark and gluon jets in your control region where the template is determined. Then you transfer the template to the signal region that has a different admixture.
Yeah.
And both are known only to some extent.
Yeah.
Not very precise.
I think the point that Jay makes, though, is that generally speaking, we don't even have the ability to do that separation with very high precision. And anyway, there are going to be some systematic uncertainties on this, and likely the precision of all these things put together just isn't going to let us still be sensitive to the quark gluon differences to a very enormous degree in this small, relatively small range in data.
Gluons are different.
No, I know. I'm not saying they're not different. I'm saying we're not very sensitive to that difference after we sum over lots of things.
I think once we do the exercise of vary the quark gluon fraction to
10%
and see how that affects, it might be negligible. You don't know that.
I totally agree. Okay, so I'm basically done. Blah 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 blah. It's useful. Okay. Thank you. I've run over. I'm up to a fourth episode.